The expressed views of the guests on this podcast are theirs alone and not necessarily endorsed by the host, TWBC, or any associated sponsor. Conversations that are robust yet balanced, on point and to the point. You are listening to The Talk of Tournament Water Ski. This is the TWBC podcast. And now, here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
Well, greetings one and all, and welcome to this latest edition of the TWBC podcast. Great to have you on board, and glad for your continuing support going forward. And so it's 2026. We've got a lot of tournaments coming up pretty soon. March starts off the season with the Moomba Masters, and there's a whole bunch of tournaments coming your way very shortly afterwards. But to talk a little bit about that and some other stuff, a skier that has appeared on this podcast probably the most out of any of the pro skiers that I have the pleasure of talking to, it is indeed, of course, Freddie Winter. How are you doing, sir?
I'm great, Tony. How are you?
Not too bad, not too bad. So I'm catching up with you, having just recently arrived into to Central Florida, where you've probably absolutely taken aback by the fact that that it's not exactly typical Floridian weather at the moment.
Yeah, when I woke up this morning, it was colder in Palm Bay than which is sort of south of Orlando. So you even think it'd be warmer, but it was colder in Palm Bay than in the UK where I left yesterday.
Yeah,
which is quite surprising, but you know, that's fine. I mean, it's also not that cold. I mean, the water's 14, 15 degrees Celsius, so you know, 60 or something, just around there in Freedom Units. And yeah, play on. Let's go water ski.
Yes, indeed, and the water does keep its heat on for a little bit longer than most, you know, most places across the world. So I mean, you're not exactly missing much, and you've actually arrived having spent a little bit of time in one of your old stomping grounds in Greece. Is that correct?
Yes, exactly. I've been there actually a couple of times since I last spoken to you. I was there in start of November.
Okay.
Sort of a week or two after I left the US last time. And then I was there like about a week ago. Yeah. So I sort of started my season there in Portaheli. It was amazing. I mean, it's my favorite place in the world, really, to ski at, you know, and to.
So what's the attraction? What's the attraction? I mean, you can obviously trace a lot of your lineage in within the sport, you know, ascending to the high lofty levels that you've achieved over the years, and you could probably draw your experiences back in Portaheli, you know. But I mean, you seem to make a habit of stopping by there, not just once or twice, but maybe three, four times, maybe in the course of a calendar year, you know. So what's the draw? Kind of sell me on Greece a little bit, if you'd be so kind.
Well, firstly, as you probably know, it's got the best food in the world, and I won't hear any argument about that. You know, people talk about Italy, and it does. Italy has phenomenal food, but I think that when it comes to, you know, the thing about Greece is, I mean, God, isn't it so intolerable when people say that they're a foodie? It's like, well, yeah, you mean you like food? Everyone likes food, so I'm not going to say that. But I'm a big fan of food. It's a big motivation in my life. So the food there is incredible. The people there are great. I've been skiing in Portaheli since I've been going to Portaheli since I was 3 months old. My parents have been skiing there.
Wow,
a long time. Dad went there when he was younger than me. I sort of have not real family there, but you know, that the sort of friends that become family, Dimitri and Trisha Karunas, who run the ski school there since 1981. I mean, it would be one of the oldest ski schools in the whole world, running at the same place. And Dimitri is now 83, Trisha's in her late 70s, and you know, they're sort of surrogate mother and father to me. So, you know, that's kind of, not to get too cheesy, but water skiing is a very sort of community based sport, and I think I have a very strong community there of great people, and Dimitri, who's running the ski school now, who's a guy that's sort of taken it on. He's I think one of the best boat drivers in the world, He's got four different boats there. He's got a Mastercraft and a few Malibus, and yeah, I don't know. There's nowhere in the world I'm sort of more happy and relaxed. I mean, that's kind of an interesting part for me. Like, as you can understand, with my, you know, water skiing is as much a passion and a hobby, it's also a job. And there's times where I find it very, very stressful, but the times where I can go to Portelli and ski with those guys and hang around that area, I just don't feel, I couldn't feel more relaxed. Like after the World Championships last year, as I've told you, Tony, I was absolutely devastated. I can't think of a more bleak day in my life as sort of that Sunday afternoon after having not skied well in the finals there, lost the World Championship that I had held for a couple of years, was miserable. But I went to Portelli for 10 days afterwards and, you know, had a few beers with some friends and enjoyed myself, but also skied every day and skied well. It's a great place to ski. You know, it can get it's a big lake, so it can get a bit windy, but I mean, it local is a phenomenal driver and yeah, I mean, that's, so have I sold you? I don't know. Like all I can say is it's just my favorite place to be, really. I adore it.
I was already sold on Greece, a long, long time ago. I mean, whenever you dine out somewhere and they give to you feta cheese, that's like a brick, you know, and put that on top of your salad, you know, I mean, that pretty much does it for me, you know,
Well, that's the Greek. You got the Greek salad, the Dakos salad, you know, like rocket salad. They got all. It's very, very healthy. You got the gyros, which is less healthy, but you know, all the meat they do there, all the cheese, saganaki. I mean, deep fried cheese. I mean, it's just it's truly unbelievable. And they have the best bottled lager in the world. And I mean that is an actual fact. I you know, give me a Mammoth beer any day. I'd probably choose that over anything.
All right, then. So we've kind of covered Greece a little bit there, but yeah.
In great detail.
Well, I mean, we could go into like the whole rough water training, you know, adverse condition training, you know, because I mean, I saw some video of you just about a week or two ago going through your paces there with some early season sets, you know. So, I mean, and it's something you got to do. If you're going to aspire to be a skier of any discernible level, you got to be consistent. You got to be consistent through all conditions. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, 100%. It's big, and I think especially you want to be a professional skier, because we don't always ski in the best stuff. Like, you know, the second and third biggest tournament in the world, they are held on substandard bodies of water. That's not to say they're substandard tournaments, but you know, Moomba is a very tricky place to ski, and the Masters is a very, very, very tricky place to ski. And last year we had the weirdest and strangest conditions I've ever skied on in Morocco were very, very difficult. But you know, I've won all those three tournaments, and those are three of my favorite wins ever. So yeah, I sort of slightly get my back up when I was with Ryan Green. In Australia not so long ago, great guy, and he said to me, he's like, you know, Freddie, when it's a bit rough, you know, you're one of the guys that's really gonna win. And I'm like, well, I've also won quite a lot on flat water as well, so I mean, you know, I'd like to think that I'm slightly more than just a sort of battler in the crap. But if you're gonna try and win tournaments, you can't be a sort of fair weather skier. And I think my background in skiing in England, having a block booking at Thorpe every week and seeing my parents, not really having a choice. It was, you know, you book for 6 months at a time at the same time through the winter and through the summers. And if it was raining, if it was windy, you went out to ski. And I think that stood me in fairly good stead for what I do now.
All right, then. So excellent. So we got a little bit of a taste of what it is to excel at that level, you know, training in rough water and what have you, you know. So let's talk about the season that's coming up. I mean, it's I don't know how many weeks it's going to be between now and it's going to be at least four, because we haven't even gotten into February yet. But I mean, there is Moomba Masters coming up in the first full weekend of March, and it's going to be a little bit complicated this year, because there's some other event going on that weekend which is kind of thrown people into a little bit of a tizzy there, so far as accommodations and stuff and and all of that going on.
Yeah, the F1, the Melbourne Grand Prix. So, I mean, I need to yet, I'm sort of yet to finalize all that. I'm going to be honest with you, Tony. I've really, really tried this off season to not think about water skiing, because I just know, talking about the season coming up, I know this is going to be an absolute slog mentally. Not physically, I think I'll be fine, but mentally, with the World Championships at the end of the season, because they've put the World Championships there in sort of late Feb 2027, which means that that's, you know, you can't get ready at the start of the season for that, not to be competitive. So it means that it's going to drag this season longer. So I'm, yeah, I mean, my off season has been extremely switched off. So I think I've got something off. Probably should check on this. I've got something booked for Moomba. I had an Airbnb booked, and then they cancelled it. Not that long ago, because the Airbnb host said that they had a family emergency. I think the family emergency was that they need to fill their pockets with some more money when they realized that the Grand Prix was on at the same weekend. And actually, I should complain to Airbnb about that. But
you could.
I should. I'm sure they don't care. But anyway, yeah, it's it'll be great. I mean, I'm to be honest with you, you don't go to Moomba to make money. And if you're going to lose, you know, I came fourth last year, and the trip, I came fourth, which was, you know, not a bad spot. And I lost about, I think, $2,000 on my trip, because I think I made $900 something prize money for fourth place, maybe not even that much. And my flight there was $1,200. So, you know, then you got the rental car, the hotel in the middle of Melbourne, that sort of thing. So frankly, when it comes to Moomba, I live the rest of my year in a way that allows me to lose money at Moomba if that is to happen. So, you know, we'll see, whatever. I mean, my aim isn't to go there and make money. My aim is to go there and win the Moomba Masters. So we'll see what happens.
Do you think a few folks are going to kind of not go to Moomba this year and just because the way the tournaments are going to be stacked next season, you've got the Worlds, and then you've got Moomba, or I think it's probably the one or the other way round type deal, you know. So they're probably on the fence a little bit with whether they should go to Moomba Masters this year or just put it off to next year.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I can only tell you it doesn't, when it comes to these sorts of tournaments, it doesn't really matter to me in some ways who turns up, because I can only go and do my best. So it's, you know, we haven't had a huge field the last few years. You know, even when I won it 2 years ago, there was plenty of people missing. There was, you know, no Will Asher, there was no Nate Smith. Same as it hasn't been for a number of years, actually. So I don't know. I don't know what will happen. I mean, this scheduling of the World Championships, I mean, I you can't have everything, and I shouldn't complain. But like, it's probably slightly less than I do. I think I'm not going to go to Moomba next year. I think I'll do the world, and I'll be so exhausted and mentally drained, having gone through Christmas and not had any sort of an off season. I'm probably going to get world done and then fly home and forget about water skiing for a few weeks and prepare for the full season ahead. I think I wonder if, you know, because it's, I think, 2 weeks after the Worlds will be Moomba. And I mean, to stay over there for 2 weeks, it's not super cheap. And
no, it
isn't. Find places to ski and all that sort of thing. So I don't know. I'm not sure if it'll have an impact on entries this year, where as people prioritize next year, or if people will just not, you know, it's different, isn't it? I mean, I think they'll probably will have some people who are, let's say, you know, they're not people that would fly there specifically for Moomba. You know, maybe they're not sort of very, very top echelon of skiers. They'll want to experience it and they'll go and do it. But I think that the guys that are really training with an aim to seriously win the World Championships or do some big stuff at the World Championships, train through the winter, I think they might not stay on for them, but they might be just sort of like me and head home. I'm not saying that's categorically what I will do, but that's where my mind is right now. I need to sort of get my mind together and figure out my schedule over the next year, really.
Now I've spoken to Tim Veald in the last webcast, and And I think he quite categorically said that that right at the end of September. Now, bear in mind that that Tim Wild is like an all-round skier, overall, you know, slalom tricks and jumping. You know,
quite a good one.
Quite a good one. Yeah, absolutely.
Pretty
handy. I mean, it was absolutely stunning in the jump competition at the Worlds last season. But he's a
Junior Masters.
Yeah, and the Junior Masters, all four titles, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So he's definitely on the upward curve. But he said that that towards the end of September into October, he said he's going to shut it down and allow his body time to like heal and do all that kind of stuff and just get prepared for the World Championships and then Movement Masters last year. Would that be something that that you would contemplate yourself or just do as you kind of planned as you just alluded to a few moments ago?
That sounds sensible. I think that's probably is what I'm going to do. I mean, we haven't got a full plan of the, or at least I haven't seen a full plan of this year's tournaments just yet. So I don't know when it's all going to finish. I mean, last year in 2025, it finished on the 30th or 31st of September, which was pretty late. Pretty early, sorry, as it normally goes. Normally, you know, it has been going to November the last few years. If there's stuff in November this year, I just can't see it. I'm going to do it. Again, with one eye on the World Championships, it just doesn't make sense. I think, you know, having that break in October and then giving yourself November, December, January to really reach a peak. And that's, I think a lot of people will be having similar thoughts. Yes, absolutely.
Well, just to kind of tell you a little bit, and I happen to have like the provisional schedule of tournaments and the first full weekend in October.
Here we go.
The first full weekend in October is the Miami Pro. So actually shutting it down a little after there would appear to be quite feasible.
That does work, actually.
So you're probably scribbling down these tournaments, you know, and just trying to get yourself scheduling right. But one development that's come up in the last few weeks, or it's probably the last couple of months, you know, give or take, is the whole Nautique World Series that has sprung up. You know, so I mean. Obviously, being one of the major competitors in all of the world, I'm sure you've got one or two opinions in regards to the Nautique World Series. So have at it.
Well, I mean, I've got two thoughts, haven't I? Really, I mean, I think you know, as a competitor at you know, more or less the top of the sport, I think it's great to have money put into the sport. So. Thank you, Nautique. I'm grateful for them to offer that, and I look forward to getting as many checks as possible. I always love to get my checks from Nautique at the Masters. They make me the happiest of the year.
Let's just put a disclaimer out there that you're a Mastercraft team skier as well. So the odd giggle or two here there isn't without reason, you know.
Well, I mean, I think anyone that's listening to this will probably understand my relationship with the Masters to a degree based on, you know, what happened a number of years ago and subsequently not being allowed in. So, you know, when I got my check last year for winning it, I was very grateful and very, you know, very happy to take that money. And, you know, I don't mind trying to do that again. I think if I'm going to be honest with you, I think that anyone that's a fan of the sport, as I am, like I'm not just a competitor, I'm someone that's a big proponent of professional water skiing. I think that anyone that sees tours going at the same time probably would say that might not be in the best interest of the future of water skiing. Funny enough, I was listening to as a nerdy podcasting I was listening to a podcast for a Formula One. Website, which actually did a sort of deep dive into the split of IndyCar racing in 1995. And quite interesting. I mean, in 94, IndyCar was doing very well. Nigel Mansell had just moved across from Formula One and Bernie Eccleston was getting quite concerned about the potential for IndyCar to overtake Formula One as the premier sort of racing series of the world. And then there was this basically a guy, he split the sport into a guy who was sort of wanted to, you know, be more important in the sport, who ran the Indy Speedway, split the sport into, put two tours out. And as a result of that, over the next 12 years,
That's probably Roger Penske.
No, it was a chap called Tony Craig, I think it was. I forget.
Yeah, that's another name that I know of as well. But I mean, Roger Penske has been quite involved in the sport as well to a certain degree.
I think he's more of a team owner, isn't he? But anyway, there was between 1995 and I think 2007, 2008, there was two tours running at the same time, and the sport went from being a challenger to Formula One to being, you know, it absolutely nuked the sport. It was a disaster. The money went down. And, you know, I don't see any sport in the world that does well with two tours at the same time. There isn't a sport in the world that does well with two tours or two series at the same time. So, you know, I mean, again, as a competitor, great. I'm looking forward to try and make a bit more money. There's more money available. But, you know, do I think it's in the best interest to have the Water Ski Pro Tour and the Nautique Series competing? I mean, I'll leave that up to other people to make up their mind on that.
You said that basically no sport does well with two tours. How about three of them? I mean, when you factor in the World Water Skiers events that normally spring up towards the mid and or end of the season, you know, I mean, that complicates matters as well.
I think that's slightly distinct. I think that's a world overall tour. I mean, that's kind of like a different, you know, and like in snow skiing, you've got the downhill, and then you've got the cross country or whatever. I mean, I think it's a different version of the sport. So I don't see that as difficult. I mean, I think, you know, if you look at over the years, a lot of the tournaments that are going to be in this Nautique Series, they used to be part of the elite point system, which as much as it could have been. You know, that system could have been utilized best to promote the sport. And I know the aim of the Water Ski Pro Tour was to do that, that, you know, that we've now got the same types of tournaments in two different tours. And, you know, I don't know. I can tell you that there's, I think, you know, I've heard from some of my fellow skiers, and there's some sort of suspicion if it's all going to be, you know, for the best for the future of water skiing. Standing here, I think that if you know, if we wanted water skiing to continue its improvement and the growing fan base and all that it has done the last few years, I think that the best thing for the sport would be to have one tour where everyone can get behind it. There's going to be no confusion with the fan base. Everyone will sort of, you know, push one thing in the same direction instead of, you know, two tours sort of fighting for tournaments and whatever's going to happen. I mean, I certainly have a concern. But again, you know, I'm 36 years old in 3 weeks, 2 weeks, whatever it is. And if I'm going to be really selfish, and I'll just say, well, you know, I can go out and make some money. But I, you know, I that's not really me. And I think over the years, I've done enough to where I feel like I've put effort into the sport to show that I am a proponent of it. And I'm frankly, you know, I'm a bit concerned that this is not the way, not the best thing for the sport.
Yeah,
but just we'll see.
Yeah, certainly it's going to be interesting times ahead, and the actual Nautique World Series, you know, doesn't really come into play until the qualifiers and the Masters tournament itself. There's a tournament going on over at Predator Bay. I can't remember what it's called or what have you, you know, but I mean, the tour in earnest doesn't really kick into high gear until about the middle of this season. But so far as the Water Ski Pro Tour is concerned, and that's been going on for what seems to be quite a while now. We've got a whole mass of tournaments coming up right after the Masters, starting off with a tournament that you alluded to just a few minutes ago, the Royal Nautique Pro on the on the river that that goes through Rabat in Morocco, and I'm looking forward to this one again, you know. And but I mean, it's one of those tournaments that is going to be heavily determined by what the elements do so far as the tide is concerned, because I mean the course and everything is less than 2 kilometers from the Atlantic Ocean, you know, and that really has a bearing in terms of the event timing for one, and how the skiers adapt to being able to ski with the current or against the current.
Yeah, I mean, look Tony, let just do me a favor. Let's just do the same again, right? I mean, same event, same good weather or acceptable weather, and same result. As far as I'm concerned. Yeah, I mean, it was spectacular last year. I mean, I think probably I obviously have very good memories of that because I managed to win the thing. So, you know, of course I look back fondly. I think that, I mean, I know personally for myself, at least, I mean, when I do well at an event, I really, really enjoy it. When I do badly at an event, doesn't matter what's going on around the outside of it, I look back on it with a sort of negative feeling. I had that at the Morocco tournament in 2024. Like, it was a phenomenal event. You know, everything was incredible. I skied badly, and I look back on it with a bit of sadness. So, yeah, we'll see. I mean, it was tough this year. We all learned something, and you know, I have to say it was probably the most intimidating time I've had to go out and ski in terms of just figuring out the conditions. That 11 meter pass that I ran away from, sort of going left away from the Atlantic Ocean, was wild. I mean, that, you know, tail current, which basically makes your ski like overturn and slip and slide, because as you start moving nose of the ski through, the tail just gets swept around. So you have to try not to turn, and you will still turn. And then you come the other way when you got to turn 3 times as hard, which I don't mind doing. So, you know, that was kind of the easier way was to come the other way, was to come, you know, with the shorter line, it felt easier to run the 10.75 towards the ocean. So it was, yeah, I mean, it's going to be wild. You know, and there's, I mean, like, I have such good fond memories of 2025, but you know, it's very possible in 2026, I don't even make the final. Anything can happen out there. We'll see. Probably a really fun one for the viewers to watch, right? Because it's, you know, you see really, really, really top level skiers looking really, really, really average.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd like to see a few of those cats go out there on that slalom course in those conditions, in that setting, and try and do what you guys do that would appear on the surface to be average, you know. So I mean that Raw Nautique Pro in Morocco is definitely going to be a highlight. Then the next tournament to come in about 4 days after that is Monaco. Do we need to say any more?
Yeah, I mean, I went there last year in Exercise and Demons, and I came second and ran a lot of fours, and I was very happy. We saw Charlie Ross do something incredible and win. I mean, he won Moomba, but it went in a field that wasn't full. But everybody was there, and he ran 10.25 in the final, and it was just incredible. So, yeah, I mean, I'm going to try not hit the dock again. And I'm going to try and do well, and we'll see how we go.
Yeah. But I mean, what is it with Charlie Ross? I mean, we saw him a few years ago. You know, he got through 10.75 meters. I think he was like 14 years of age, you know, over at Swiss Pro and what have you. I think that's pretty much well documented. So we don't have to go through the weeds on that one. But I mean, there was a number of years where he was struggling to find his consistency, and now, you know, within about the last season and a half, he's taking names right now, you know, and the guy is on fire, and to be feared by all those that are around him.
I think you're being a little unfair there, Tony. I think that, you know, him trying to find his consistency, I mean, he was still running three at 10.25, like, very, very frequently.
No,
I mean,
But folks were like crowning him at that stage in the game when he was midway through his teens, you know, we thought, we've just found our latest and greatest superstar, you know. I mean, we're looking forward to seeing this guy just turn it up, you know, in every tournament, you know. But as you know,
well, they were right, you know. But I think that's what happens. I mean, like in any sport, you know, you see a teenager do something insane, and they can't, you know, they're not going to do it every time. But you see the peaks, and you know, like Kimi Antonelli in Formula One. You know, there's a number of people, you know, Lionel Messi, when he was sort of 18, like he wasn't doing it every time, but he was doing, you know, you saw enough. And then, you know, then you start doing it every time. Like but yeah, I mean, to your point, like this last year, and I don't think it has been a season and a half. I think it really has been just this last year. Like, you know, he won Moomba, but didn't win Moomba spectacularly. He ran four at 10.75, which was great, but I don't think that really, you know, and well done to him. I'm not taking anything away from him, but I mean, I don't think that told anyone that he was going to start running. I think he ran five or six 10.25s last year, maybe seven. He ran it in the finals of three pro tournaments, I think, which is, you know, unbelievable. So yeah, I mean, that's, yeah. But you know, the thing is, I know Charlie quite well. You know, over the years, he and I have always gone.
I mean, you have to, because you're on the same brand of ski, for crying out loud.
We don't have to, because we're on the same brand of ski. But I mean, just don't, like, I'm not sure that's certainly not the reason why I'm friends with Charlie. I mean, I like the ski, great, but you know, I'd be talking to, if I was on a, I don't know, a Denali and he was on a Connolly, I think, you know, we'd still be chit chatting. But no, but what I'll say about him, which I think is, which people maybe they get this impression, but I mean, he's just so motivated, like, and he's so driven, and he's actually a very serious chap. He's a nice guy, but he, you know, you get talking to him, and you know, I had a sort of off, not just, I was like chit chatting with him at a tournament, and you know, so I was getting annoyed at my gates, and then we end up talking a week later at the Mastercraft Pro, and then at the Travers Grand Prix, where I had a week in between to fix something on my gate, and I sort of mentioned it to him. You know, we were talking about technique and all that. And then he sent me a message about a week later, and he's like, "Hey, I just wanted to ask you what you did different, because I can't see much different." You know, he's studying; he's a student of it, and that, you know, I think I was like that, maybe not quite so effectively, but I was, you know, really looking at what everyone was doing, and yeah, that's why he's so good, because he cares and he wants to do it. I think we all care, but I think that if you look at what he's doing. You know, he's a competitor of mine. I want to beat him and stuff. But I think of all the people I ski against, like, you know, he's the guy that's leaving no stone unturned. There's a handful of people I know that are leaving no stone unturned. I'm one of them, I'd like to say. And then there's some people that they're not doing everything, and they kind of get frustrated when they don't do well. And I know who they are. And then you kind of go, well, yeah, that's, you know, that's you. And you know, myself, I've had, like, when I was 23, 24, 25, I was not doing what Charlie Ross was doing now. I think I was, you know, I was having a bit of fun on the side and whatever, but it's very impressive, his attitude to it. And I think, you know, it's not been a surprise. I mean, to be honest with you, I say it's not been a surprise. I thought Charlie Ross would get to this level. I did not think it would happen last year. I mean, it was incredible what he did last year. Really, really incredible.
Mm-hmm. Indeed, and you know, I mean, we at TWBC, we normally analyze our viewership and peaks and troughs and what have you, certain events, you know, and normally post event we get like a little bit of a spike, and it's probably most of that viewing is probably Charlie Ross, you know, just
yeah, that's fair point. Charlie Ross is checking on everyone's gates. No, but and I don't mean that in it. Trust me, I'm not saying that in any way negatively. I mean, like, this is what it takes. You've got to be open to other people's perspective and what they're doing, and you've got to study who I know I do. And he, you know, he really wants it. He's got a good team around him. He's also been based in Florida his whole life. He's had everything, you know, everything's been pointing in the right direction for him. And yeah, he's phenomenal. And you know, I've got a job in my hands to try and beat him in some tournaments in the next few years.
All right, then. So at this point in the podcast, I normally would be talking and continuing our conversation for the best part of an hour. But let's kind of leave off here a little bit. We'll return for part two in just a moment. This is part one of my conversation with Freddie Winter as he gets ready for the season to come. And with that, we'll return to part two for next week. And until that time, it is ciao for now.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.